Oregon in general and Southern Oregon in particular continue to show resistance to getting children vaccinated against once common diseases. Diseases like pertussis, whooping cough, had nearly disappeared, but they are resurgent in an age when parents are concerned about the effects the vaccines themselves can have on children. Oregon law changed a couple of years ago on getting children exempted from vaccinations, but now the rate of vaccine exemptions for kindergartners is climbing once again, with Jackson and Josephine counties leading the way. From the Oregon Health Authority, Stacey DeAssi-Matthews is the Immunization School Law Coordinator and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Stacey, thanks for joining us once again.
Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
Sure. Would you lay out the issue with exemptions and what has been happening of late?
Sure. So immunizations are really so basic to healthy communities that every state in the nation has laws requiring vaccination for kids who attend school. And in Oregon, about 90% of parents choose to fully immunize their children as part of a healthy lifestyle. But some Oregon parents request a non-medical exemption to one or more of the required immunizations. And in the past couple of years, we have seen the rate of non-medical exemptions increase among Oregon kindergartners after an initial decrease due to a change in the law.
Let's get into the exemptions then, because it would appear that if there's a non-medical exemption, there must be a medical one as well.
There is a medical exemption, and fewer than 1% of kids in Oregon have a medical exemption to immunization, and that's an exemption based on a medical reason not to be immunized. For example, if a child were allergic to a vaccine, then they would be eligible for a medical exemption. Our rate of non-medical exemption is much higher than that, at 7.5% of kindergartners statewide with a non-medical exemption to one or more of the required vaccines in this school year that's just wrapping up now.
And at 7.5%, I mean, how big is this increase in recent times?
Yeah, so that's a full percentage point increase from 2017, where we were at 6.5%. And 7.5% this year is the highest that we've measured since we started measuring vaccine exemption rates going back to the 1980s.
Okay, so this is a significant number that you haven't hit before.
Yes, that's correct. And to put it in perspective, that's about one in every 13 kids with an exemption to one or more of the vaccines. And of course, the flip side of that is by far still most Oregon parents are choosing to fully immunize their children. And so we're pleased with that. What we're really concerned about are pockets of high exemption rates, where you have an individual school where the exemption rate is much higher than that, and fewer children are immunized against very contagious diseases like measles and pertussis or whooping cough.
We have another guest with us now. Dr. Paul Cieslak is also with the Oregon Health Authority. He's the medical director of the Acute and Communicable Disease Prevention and Immunization Programs. Dr. Cieslak, good to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Good morning.
So at 7.5% of non-medical exemption for kindergartners, is this an alarm point for OHA?
Well, again, Stacey was emphasizing the good point, which is the vast majority of people are still getting vaccinated, which we endorse as the right thing to do, both for personal and for public health. But if you look at some of the schools that have exemption rates of upwards of 50%, and consider what would happen if, you know, say, somebody with measles lived at that school, it's very concerning. So I think we would have an epidemic of measles before we even, you know, were able to realize it. And we would be, you know, really behind the eight ball trying to chase all the cases down.
I know in previous discussions about the vaccines that with the different vaccines for different diseases, there are different levels of desirable rates for vaccination. Why?
Well, if the question is about herd immunity, in other words,
yes,
how much immunity in the population do you need to stop transmission entirely? You know, if a virus or a bacterium can't find a susceptible person to go to, and it's only spread by the person-to-person route, then you can eradicate the disease. That's what we did with smallpox and what we're on the verge of doing with polio in the world. And that the amount of immunity that you need is going to vary by how transmissible the agent is. So if it's not very transmissible, then you don't need very many people to be immune in order to stop it. But with the more highly contagious diseases like measles and chickenpox, you know, you need something like 93-94% of the population to be immune, or the virus is always going to find that one susceptible person because that's how contagious it is. But, you know, with a disease like hepatitis A that's a little bit harder to transmit, we don't need anything like that. We really saw rates plummeting when we hit 50%. And so it varies quite a bit from disease to disease. And when you're talking about 7% exemptions, you know, the diseases I worry about are measles and chickenpox.
Measles and chickenpox, the big ones. Okay. Well, you've had some pertussis outbreaks too, haven't you?
Yes, and the problem with that is not that we have low levels of immunization within the population, because our rates are actually very high, but that the vaccine immunity wears off, unfortunately. Now, with the measles vaccine, the immunity appears to be very durable. I mean, with two shots, you know, we think the vast majority of people are protected for life. But with the pertussis vaccine, unfortunately, you know, after 3, 4, 5 years, you start to see even vaccinated people getting susceptible again.
We're talking to the Oregon Health Authority about vaccination rates in Oregon. Paul Cieslak is the Medical Director of Acute and Communicable Disease Prevention and Immunization Programs. Stacy DeAssi-Matthews is the Immunization School Law Coordinator. We're talking about 7.5% non-medical exemption rate for kindergartners in Oregon across the state right now, bigger in Jackson and Josephine counties, which we'll get to in just a moment. Your thoughts on vaccines and what's going on here? 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Stacy, there's a very good interactive map that is provided now by the health authority that gives you a chance to look by county and by school even. And in looking at that Oregon map, Jackson and Josephine County is very light in color. Granted, Wallowa, too, I should point out. And what does that indicate?
Yeah, so Josephine and Jackson County have some of the highest rates of non-medical exemption and the lowest rates of immunization in the state of Oregon. And if you go to that interactive map, you can see the immunization and exemption rates for individual schools for individual diseases. So, for example, if you were worried about the potential for a measles outbreak in your child's school, you can go to that interactive map, find your child's school, click on it, and see the immunization rate for something like measles there.
And so how do people get exemptions? When we're talking about these non-medical exemptions, what do people have to do? I mean, the law required more of people to get them in the first place now, doesn't it?
Yeah, so prior to 2014, a parent simply signed a form to claim an exemption, and we continued to see an increase in the exemption rate. And so the law was changed then to require parents who wish to claim an exemption to get a little bit of education about the benefits and risks of vaccines and the diseases prior to claiming that exemption. And parents can get that education in one of two different ways, by watching an online video available from the Oregon Health Authority or by a consultation with a healthcare practitioner.
And they don't think they have to take a quiz or anything when they're done, do they?
No, it's simply to make sure that parents have science-based information when making a decision about exempting or vaccinating their child, because we know there's a lot of great information available, especially, for example, on the internet, but there's also some misinformation there as well. And so by having this science-based information available, we ensure that parents who are choosing to claim an exemption have that and as they're making their decision.
We've been talking about the exemption rate, which at 7.5% is higher than it's been, as you pointed out, for many years in Oregon. What the map shows, though, the interactive map we were just talking about, available through the Oregon Health Authority and is linked from our webpage at jeffexchange.org, it shows vaccination rates. And so Josephine County's vaccination rate, and Jackson's for that matter, for all vaccines is at 89%, which, you know, sounds pretty good. But why is that not enough, Paul Cieslak?
I'm sorry, why is what not enough?
89% of all kids vaccinated for all vaccines.
Oh, right. Well, again, if the question is how do you stop transmission, then it's sufficient for many diseases. But for the more contagious diseases like measles and chickenpox, it's not going to be sufficient to stop transmission. So if you dropped a case of measles into one of these schools that has those kind of exemption rates, I mean, it would have been transmitted to you know, several or maybe even dozens of kids before public health officials even, you know, realize it. And it could spread like wildfire. I mean, it would be, you know, it's dry tinder waiting for a match. We're pretty accustomed to the notion that these diseases aren't circulating because we've basically, you know, won some great victories with immunizations. We don't see a lot of measles or chickenpox or rubella nowadays. But for those diseases, you know, 11%, 13% exemption means that it could continue to spread throughout the community, you know, away from the schools. So everybody would be at increased risk in that scenario.
And what is the general age range at which the vaccinations take place? I mean, do they get them all at once bunched up, or is it spread over the course of their toddler years?
Well, it varies because the things that are taken into consideration are, is the immune system mature enough to mount an immune response to the vaccine? Because that's really what we're looking to engender. So for some vaccines, at very early ages, they just don't make an immune response to it. For example, the measles vaccine and the chickenpox vaccines should both be given at greater than 12 months of age. We'd immunize them sooner if we could, but they just don't respond as well. But for many of the vaccines, they're timed to be given at well-child visits, which are typically 2, 4, 6 months of age. So when you're talking about the diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis vaccines, or pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, those are given at 2, 4, 6 months of age because children do respond, and it turns out that they're at very high risk during those ages as well. So based both on whether they'll respond and when is the high risk period, the schedule is made.
Is there any credence to a parent saying, I just want to wait. I want to wait till my kid's like 6 or 7 or something to get these vaccines. Is there any medical reason for doing that?
No, we don't think there is any medical reason for doing that. You're taking your chances all the way up to those ages. So for most of the diseases, there is some risk. Now, if you had perfect knowledge of what your child might be exposed to, if you know for a fact that, you know, no one in the family is carrying hepatitis B, for example, then theoretically it would be possible to delay some of these immunizations or take a longer-term schedule. But two problems with that. You know, number one is, you know, you don't always know. There can be silent carriers to which people can be exposed. And number two is our data suggests that even with the best of intentions, people who draw out the schedules, a lot of them don't end up completing them. They take more visits to the doctors. For example, I've seen alternative immunization schedules proposed that call not for 3 visits to the doctor in the first year of life, but for 10 visits to the doctor. And, you know, how many parents can really take the time to make all of those visits? Theoretically, if they did, they could get their child up to date on a different schedule, but it's just not very practical.
We have not talked, though, about the reasons that people seek exemptions. And, Stacy, do they have to provide them, or is it just, I want a non-medical exemption?
In Oregon, there's no requirement that parents provide information about why they are claiming a non-medical exemption. So we don't have data showing the reasons why parents are claiming the non-medical exemptions.
All right. You only have to Google vaccine on the Internet to get a sense of what people are afraid of. Paul Cieslak, what assurances do you give people when they're saying, look, I'm just concerned about what's in the vaccines, what might happen to my kid?
Well, it turns out that vaccines are some of the most studied medical products that we have. I mean, we give them to millions and millions of children, and there are several systems set up to try to follow up and detect unexpected side effects to those vaccinations. So we have a vaccine adverse events reporting system that, you know, offers to collect data on adverse events following vaccination from across the country from any vaccine, and doctors are encouraged to report untoward side effects. And then if they see a signal, if they see, oh boy, it looks like several people are reporting something unusual that we didn't expect, the CDC will start looking at those data and actually conduct a study among several managed care populations that have really good data both on who in their population gets vaccinated and what they're coming to see the doctor or the emergency department with. And they look for correlations and say, you know, was this a chance occurrence? Because, you know, there's 4 million children born in the United States every year, and with each of them getting, you know, 2, 4, 6 month age vaccinations, there are really millions of vaccines given, and you can have chance occurrences of anything. But they're looking for a correlation. Are you more likely to get this side effect if you've had, you know, shortly after you've had the vaccine than among children who didn't receive the vaccine? So those are the systems that are constantly in motion, you know, kind of scanning for side effects. And it's not only in the United States, it's worldwide, of course, that most of these vaccines are given. And so if there's a problem, you know, we think we have decent systems in place to detect it. I would note, for example, that with a rotavirus vaccine that was licensed in the 1990s, they did see a little bit of a problem after it was licensed and recommended, and they canceled their recommendation to get it, and pretty soon the vaccine came off the market entirely. So that system seems to work.
We're talking about vaccines in Oregon with Dr. Paul Cieslak and Stacey DeAssi-Matthews at the Oregon Health Authority. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Daniel in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. How's everyone doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing all right, thanks. I just wanted to call with a couple comments. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that people will take the word over, you know, something they see on the internet with a quick Google search over, you know, advice from their doctors. And like the gentleman was saying earlier, vaccines are some of the most studied medicinal products that we use. And I think that people are, frankly, a little bit out of their minds or scared to think that there's some huge global conspiracy involving thousands of doctors and scientists that are out to poison their children.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts there, Daniel. Appreciate that. So Paul Cieslak, I mean, let's face it, in the age of the Internet, this is what you have to put up with. Is this just part of what life is like in our age?
Yeah. Yes, I think it is. I mean, and I try to put myself in the shoes of parents who, you know, their friend tells them something, and then they go to the Internet and start looking. And, you know, pretty soon you're getting pretty concerned at some of the misinformation that you can see out there, or even the occasional anecdote of something that actually did happen. But, you know, with an anecdote, you can't really make a logical correlation that the vaccine caused it. You know, a professor in med school once told me you can't give a million people a drink of water without somebody, you know, having a side effect after it, because not from the water, just because a million people, something's going to happen. So I understand how parents develop their concern, but my only response to it is, as you say, you know, talk to the people who are involved with this kind of thing day in, day out. Talk to your pediatricians who are giving these vaccines and who have, you know, or some of the people who have researched the side effects of it. I mean, you know, I'm not talking about the vaccine manufacturers. I'm talking about academic researchers or public health departments, and go to their websites. There's a great website, for example, produced by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia that can answer a lot of parents' questions about vaccines. So that's one that we would recommend.
I want to come back to the map with Stacey DeAssi-Matthews, because the map does not only shows you rates of vaccination by vaccine, county by county, but also school by school. And as I look through some of the dots on the map in Jackson and Josephine counties, the lighter colored ones indicate that compliance is higher. The redder the dot, the lower the vaccination rate. Table Rock Elementary School, for example, 96-97% covered. Walker Elementary School in Ashland, 73%. And then I see some private schools here that have much lower rates. So the rules are different for private schools, Stacey?
The rules are actually the same for private schools.
Really?
Students who attend private schools have to have the documentation either of immunization or exemption, just like students in public schools must have the same documentation. And we do see some individual private schools with higher exemption rates than some of our public schools, but it's really a mix. And you'll see once in a while a public school with a lower immunization rate as well. And so we encourage parents who are interested in the immunization rate at their child's school to go to that map. And we also encourage healthcare providers to go to that map if they're talking to a parent about a specific vaccine and want to see the coverage rate and potentially the risk if a case of disease were to come into that school of turning into an outbreak. We encourage them to go to that map to have a conversation with parents about the risk in their child's school.
So if kids do not have a vaccination, do have an exemption, if a disease shows up in the school, are they excluded from school for a while? Is that state law, or is that, because I noticed that happening in Ashland when they had a pertussis outbreak.
I'm going to go ahead and let Dr. Cieslak answer that question.
Yes, for most of the diseases, the default is that the child, anybody sick with one of those diseases has to be excluded until the period of contagiousness is over. But susceptible people, even if they have a bona fide exemption to the vaccine, are typically excluded. There is some discretion on the part of the local health officer based on, where in the disease it is and what the threat is perceived to be to the other students. But the default is, yes, they are excluded.
So, Stacey DeAssi-Matthews is not your department, I guess, because you're the law coordinator, but is there another wave of public information that is likely to come out of this, another way of trying to convince people that vaccines are good?
Well, certainly our work in the immunization program here at the Oregon Health Authority tries to encourage people to get immunizations to protect their individual child. Themselves, even adults, need immunizations, and also their communities, like their school population. And the work that we do here helps ensure access to immunizations for people who are low income and making sure everyone has the opportunity to protect their children and their communities against these vaccine-preventable diseases.
Stacey DeAssi-Matthews is the Immunization School Law Coordinator for the Oregon Health Authority. That's where Dr. Paul Cieslak is the Medical Director for the Acute and Communicable Disease Prevention and Immunization Programs. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.